I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. Hey everybody, I'm Canyon Clark here with Jeff Fry and Scott Clark. We got another guest on tonight. We're going to have actually two this week, so we'll have a special episode coming out Saturday as well. Steve Shirk's going to be back on. But tonight, I will let Forrest do his own introduction since he knows more about himself than I do, and we'll get it kicked off. Forrest, go ahead, man. Let's start with what you do now, and then we'll go back to kind of where you got your start and how you got here.
All righty, sounds good. Well, I'm Forrest Bonin, and I work for Drury Outdoors. I'm Terry Drury's farm manager and cameraman, and I've been with him for 4 years now.
Cool. So, I mean, normally when we have a guest on, or like when we did our first episode, we like to talk about first deer, kind of our first memories hunting, because everybody kind of remembers that stuff. So what's maybe like your earliest memory of hunting and how you got into it?
My earliest memory, I guess, even really before I started hunting, when I was a little kid, I'd always get super excited. My mom and dad would go out hunting, and they'd come back with deer or turkeys or ducks and geese they'd shot, and I'd always be crawled up in the truck bed holding the antlers and all that stuff.
Right.
And then I started rabbit hunting when I was 7 years old with my dad. And my mom, my mom's big into hunting too, so my whole family really is. And then I killed my first deer. I shot a buck with a slug gun there in Indiana when I was 11 years old, and killed my first turkey that year too. And that adrenaline overdose there really got me, and I've been addicted to it ever since.
Right. So that leads into, did you go to school for this kind of stuff? How'd you get to working for the Drurys? How'd you get into that outfit?
Yeah, so it really all started in college. Okay. I went to college down at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. I was in their forestry program there, and my specialization was wildlife habitat management. I knew I always wanted to go into some kind of field working with wildlife and habitat in general.
Right.
Then while I was down there, I bought my first DSLR camera from a buddy of mine and started taking pictures, and a couple of my buddies, we started filming our hunts just on public ground down there just for fun, kind of screwing off and all that stuff. And I ended up going an extra year down there and got a minor in photography and media production.
Gotcha.
And in that last year, actually, I set up my classes, so I only had class 2 days a week, and I guided duck hunts for 5 days out of the week. So I'd go to class 2 days and duck hunt 5 days. And through working for the outfitter, he's a good friend of Terry's and Mark's, and he introduced me to him, and they just got lucky. They had a position open, and filled out a resume, sent it in there, and met Terry and got hired, and that's how I ended up here.
Nice, man. That sounds like a pretty good schedule there for your last year.
Yeah. They took advantage of the being able to set up my own schedule in college.
Right, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, hey, Forrest Scott here. Hey, listen, we're not too far from SIU. We're familiar with a lot of people who went to school down there. They majored in a lot of things besides forestry and some other stuff.
Yeah, I love my time down there.
I bet you did.
No, but you're a fairly local guy, right? You're an Illinois guy, aren't you?
Actually, I'm from Indiana.
Okay, okay.
Fort Wayne, the northeast corner of the state.
Gotcha.
And I'm over in Missouri now, but I spent 5 years down there in southern.
Gotcha. So what's it like working for those guys and Terry? And then, I mean, obviously, I guess you work with some Mark and the rest of them too. What's that kind of like during the hunting season and then even in the off season? I assume you're pretty busy as far as production work and then getting stuff ready to go on TV and all your internet stuff you guys are doing now, and then obviously as well with managing the farm, what's that kind of look like?
Yeah, I mean, everyone always kind of jokes around and say it's the off season, and really there is no,
right.
Like, there's no thing as off season for us. We're always doing something. But I absolutely love it. It's my dream job. I just got lucky enough to combine both my passions, wildlife and photography.
Mm-hmm.
But so like during the off season, I'm on the farms doing stuff. And obviously, we're always videoing, shooting pictures, kind of trying to inform people, tell them what we're doing. And then hunting season hits. And I mean, early in the season and late in the season, we really only hunt afternoons typically, depending on the weather and stuff. So,
right.
In the mornings, typically we're out doing stuff. As far as maybe working on the farm, doing something or shooting sponsor interviews or pictures, all that stuff, and then hunt. And then, obviously during the rut, there in November, we're hunting pretty much all day.
Right.
So, but it's nonstop year round. There's always something to do.
Yeah, for sure. So, that being said, I know you guys are doing, or at least I've seen a lot of stuff on your Instagram. You're doing quite a bit of burning, seems like, and some shed hunting. What other kind of stuff are you guys doing this time of year? Is that mainly what you're focused on? What are you guys doing as far as the property goes?
I mean, right now we're a little bit slower just because it's been so wet. But yeah, we've been doing a controlled burning. We got here on the Missouri farm, we got probably 200 acres that we try to burn. And we typically burn it every year. Just trying to kind of keep it that in the early successional growth. We don't really want to trees. It's a lot of warm season native grasses, stuff like that. So we've been doing in between the rain events, we've been trying to burn as much of that as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously shed hunting a little bit. We kind of just wrapped that up. We just actually kind of made our last little walk through the farm the other day, kind of in an area that we hadn't walked yet this year, and picked up, we had a pretty good day the other day, picked up a few, had a couple of buddies come out, a couple of guys that film with Drury Outdoors came out and walked with us.
Mm-hmm.
Picked up a pretty good little pile of them, a couple of deer we recognized. We didn't find all the deer we wanted to, but
right.
Found a few that we knew about. And then we're also moving some blinds around right now. We have a few spots. We put some new food plots in last fall, and we hung tree stand sets on them, kind of just trying to figure out how the deer move through the area and all that stuff. And we just got a couple new blinds in the other day, so we're starting to place those, build the platforms for them, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And get those go, try to let the deer get used to them on those fields.
Right. So as far as the shed hunting goes, I know around here we've been seeing some bucks. Occasionally you'll hear a guy say they're still holding both sides right now, some of them holding one side. What are you guys seeing? Most of them, do you think, dropped up there where you're at? Most of the ones you wanted to find, you still getting decent pictures and stuff, or what's it look like for you guys?
We actually just shut all our cell cameras off of, actually just this week,
okay.
Because we thought about 95% of our bucks had dropped.
Yeah.
We had one deer. I actually saw a buck the other night holding both sides. And then the next morning, I guess that was about a week ago. I saw him one night, and the next day I picked up one side off of him, in one of our fields when I was out pulling some cameras. But I would say 95% of them are dropped,
mm-hmm.
dropped by now. And I feel like they held a lot later in Missouri than they did in Illinois. We have a farm in each state, and in Illinois they dropped really early. We picked up quite a few sheds in early February this year over there.
Really?
But here this year they held pretty late into March here in Missouri.
Yeah. And that's another thing, you kind of mentioned that you guys just shut off your cell cameras and stuff. So assuming you guys don't run those all year round, do you run any cameras year round? And then if you don't, when do you start picking that back up again? Because we've talked about that before, different times of year when we like to take stuff down, and sometimes the situation is dictated by what's around us, when we might take them down or leave them up. And then as far as when we put them back up, what's your thoughts on that? When do you guys kind of try to start running them again or shutting them off, or do you leave some year round?
We leave some of them on some of our clover plots, like where there might be deer on it year round.
Right.
We will leave some of those cameras on those. We don't, if they're cell cams, we just shut them off and just let them keep taking pictures. We don't run the actual cell feature on them all year.
Right.
The photonics, we can shut them off and hibernate them. We usually don't flip the actual cell feature back on until late June, early July, when those bucks are starting to get developed enough where we can tell who they are. But we will leave some of the cameras on some of those food plots. We'll leave them on year round.
Gotcha.
Just to see how they're to see if there is deer in there still. And mm-hmm. but like some of those cameras that we run on scrapes, or like say some grain fields or something like that, or in the timber where bucks might be cruising through, we'll wait and won't put those out till later in the year.
Okay.
So this is Scott again. Hey, listen, so if you get your cameras up and running and you've spotted that target buck for this year that you've been watching for the last 2, 3, or 4, whatever it is, are there things that you do as a manager other than stand placement to try to make that magic happen on camera for one of the breweries, or how do you do that?
I mean, so like with the cell cams, I mean, we have our setup where like Terry and I get all the pictures from our cameras. So we both look at them and we're constantly talking about it and trying to come up with a game plan and stuff. But one of the things we like to do is go back, say there's like a particular deer we want to target. We pick up his sheds and we know he made it through the year. We save all our trail cam pictures from years past. Mm-hmm. So we actually start kind of developing that plan, way in advance. Like I went in and put a blind up the other day for a deer we're planning on targeting this year. I picked up one of his sheds. We know he made it through. So we actually went in and moved a blind in. There was an area we hung a camera in there. We hadn't had one in there before. Got a bunch of pictures of him this past fall in there in daylight. So we went ahead and moved a blind in there way ahead of time. That's kind of a big thing for us, is we just go back and look at past year's history with the crop rotations and stuff and see how a particular deer might have used an area throughout the fall. And then we try to make our game plan early, so we're not having to go in and be intrusive during the actual deer season. Just kind of let them have it and we're ready to go before the season gets there.
Yeah, I think that's something that probably a lot of guys miss too, that you just mentioned there. Basing the activity you've seen on even something like a crop rotation. And I know obviously you guys do a lot with the weather and you've got the DeerCast app, so you can kind of see what they're doing based on that. But something like whether your farmer's got corn or beans out that particular year and how it affected the deer for that year and what it's going to do this year based on what's out there. I think that's things that probably a lot of guys miss.
Yeah. Like we have a couple deer, especially noticed it in Illinois. Some of those deer are bean hogs and some of them are corn hogs. Like depending on the crop rotation of buck, we actually have a couple deer that they've totally depended on where the crops are at. We watched them at 3, 4, 5 the last 3 years. And depending on where the crop is, the deer is going to be on a total other end of the farm. Mm-hmm. A couple of them, they just love that corn. And once the corn comes out, we'll leave, usually we leave some standing grain there. And if there's standing corn in one area, there's one deer, he's going to be on it. Like he loves corn, and he loves that area when there's corn there. But then the following year we had beans there and we never got a picture of him on that end of the farm. He totally shifted. Mm-hmm. So that's something, I don't know, a lot of guys, I think, do you realize it? But also there's some people that may not realize that.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things we do at Ridge Hunters, we'll go out, we do like consultations and stuff and then management for guys. So we get to work with a lot of hunters, guys with properties that don't necessarily know what they want to do with them, or they just need help doing stuff with them. So we get to see a lot of that stuff. And like you're saying, there are definitely guys that do understand that, some better than others and some not, which is actually part of the reason we started the podcast. Is there so much misinformation out there, whether it be Facebook groups, on the internet, wherever you go, guys get the wrong idea of stuff. So I wanted kind of a place where they could come and get some good information. And obviously having guys like you on, Steve, a guy we were actually originally supposed to have on tonight, having some guests on that can talk about that stuff and put some good information out there. That's really kind of why I wanted to start doing this. So all that stuff is for sure good stuff. Another thing I was going to ask is, obviously you guys are killing a lot of big deer year in and year out. And to do that, you have to have big deer, first of all. I mean, you can't go to a county where there's no big deer and shoot a 200-inch buck. So first of all, I think obviously you have to be in the right area. But to be consistently killing nice deer, what are kind of some of the biggest things in your opinion? Is it having the right food, cover, combination of things? Hunting smart, is it all of those things? What are your thoughts on what it takes to be consistently killing big deer? And obviously some of it's luck too, I guess, but
yeah, definitely takes a little bit of luck. I mean, yeah, it's really a combination of everything. I mean, really a deer. I mean, they have to have food, they have to have water, and they have to have cover. Like, those are, I mean, obvious things. So having all that help. Honestly, hunting smart, I think that's something a lot of people don't do. Like, we're really, really careful about how we access stands. I think that's a huge key to killing mature deer is access. We'll go out of our way to, we'll walk an extra couple hundred yards to walk up a ditch to where a deer couldn't see us. They were bedded on a hillside, or right. We'll go in, and there's a couple of spots where we literally will plant a plot screen, going into a blind, or we'll go in and cut a whole row of corn out going into a blind to walk through that cornfield instead of walking through a food plot. Mm-hmm. And paying attention to wind while you're accessing it. Cause once you actually get to the stand set, your wind could be good. But if you blow your wind across bedded deer on your way in,
yep.
That can obviously hurt you. And then obviously, like, we watch deer cast constantly. I mean, we hunt pretty much every day of the fall, but we won't crash in on our best spots unless the weather conditions are perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, those are all big things, I guess. And just constantly be learning. I mean, there's obviously not every deer is going to be the same. Like, mm-hmm. some deer may daylight a lot. Some deer may only daylight when the weather conditions are perfect. And that kind of goes back to the trail cameras as well. Like, we'll go back and look at, like, say we get a picture of a deer in daylight on a certain day, we'll go back and look at where he's coming in to the field, like which direction he's coming from, and say, like, okay, what was the weather conditions that day? We screenshot the weather every single day. I got a journal. Every single night we get in from hunting, I write down all the weather conditions, and we'll go back. And if we get a picture of a deer daylighting, we'll go back and look at the weather conditions that night. And then if there's similar weather conditions coming up, we may go and hunt that spot just because those weather conditions are similar.
Right. So is that attention to detail something you've inherited through working with the Drurys, or is that something you were doing before, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. In college, we hunted a lot of public ground.
Right.
So there's obviously a lot of factors that are out of our control, like mm-hmm. a lot of pressure and stuff, but, hanging out with Terry, he's very attentive to detail. So I've definitely picked up a lot of that from him.
Right.
Like, I mean, I paid attention to temperature and wind direction and the barometer and stuff. But, I mean, when it comes down to the moon phases and, I mean, wind speeds and all that stuff, I've definitely learned a ton from Terry over the last few years.
Yeah. And back to what you were talking about before, is like the entry and exit and stuff. One of my favorite things I've ever seen, entries to a stand. I don't know if you'd have been in on it or not. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember seeing, and I don't remember which Drury show it was on, but Terry had a blind set up with a cornfield to the backside of it. And like you said, just had basically a walkway through the middle of this cornfield where they'd spaced a row out where you could walk down there quietly without hitting either side of it, climb right up into the back of that blind and be good to go. And that's something, again, like us working with hunters all over the place, entry and exit is huge, and I think it's missed quite a bit. Like you said, the wind can be perfect for where your stand's at, but if you screw it up on the way in or out, you're done before you've even got started.
Yeah, kind of. And I know exactly what you're talking about. We turned the one row off in the corn planter there, so our rows were wider there as a guest row. We do that actually in quite a few of our fields, here on both of our farms.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, to what you say, screwing it up going in, I mean, it's kind of that domino effect. If you bump one deer, they're going to carry in those deer that may have been coming out at 4 o'clock. They may not come out till 5 or 5:30 then.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys doing any kind of, we've been talking about it quite a bit here recently. It's been the season for it. You guys do any type of predator control up there, trapping, coyote calling or anything like that?
Yeah. So last year we actually had, Terry's grandson, one of his really good friends is a trapper, and he came up and he trapped our farm for, a couple weeks. We trapped like 150 or 160 raccoons, a few coyotes, some skunks and possums and stuff.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, we coyote call, here in Missouri. We can use the thermals, and obviously in Illinois we can too.
Right.
So we got we got some thermal gear, and we've been calling them a little bit. It's been kind of slow this year. Mm-hmm. We haven't killed quite as many as we did last year, but we've definitely been killing a few.
Yeah. How much emphasis do you guys put on that, and how much effect do you think it has on the deer population? I want to get into the turkey population in a minute, because, like I said, I'm sure you're a turkey hunter too, if you hang out with those guys and were before, like you said. But as far as the deer population, first of all, with the coyotes and then maybe even the growing bobcat population, do you guys put much effort into kind of curbing that, the effect that they have? Or do you kind of see it as it is what it is and there's not a lot you can do about it? What do you guys do for that, if anything?
I mean, I definitely think killing coyotes definitely helps, especially with those fawns. Mm-hmm. And I think in different areas, depending on how high the coyote density is, can have a difference too. Like on our Illinois farm, the coyote population is extremely high over there. And mm-hmm. the coyotes mess up quite a few of our hunts. In Missouri here, our coyote population isn't near as high. So we don't go, I mean, obviously we try to still kill some.
Right.
But we don't go near as hard trying to kill coyotes here in Missouri as we do in Illinois. We really put a lot of our effort towards trying to kill them over in Illinois, mm-hmm. Where the population is much higher and the deer density is a little bit lower over there. So when a coyote does, say a pack of coyotes does kill three or four deer over there, it's going to make a bigger difference than it does here in Missouri, where our deer population is much higher as well. Right. But I do think, and as far as the bobcats go, I personally don't think they have a huge effect on the deer population. I think they would, I mean, they definitely kill a couple of fawns every year probably, but adult deer, I don't think they have near the impact that the coyotes do.
No. I think they're a lot harder on the turkeys, along with that we have a lot of nest predation. I don't know what your guys' numbers are like as far as turkeys are in Missouri, but around where we're at, Southern Illinois, it's going to be tough in a couple of weeks finding birds to kill.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on the bobcats are much harder on the turkeys than they are on the deer. We've noticed a huge difference just trapping coons the last couple of years. We trapped all those coons and we hadn't had a really good hatch for a couple of years, and then last year our hatch was absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
we had more broods than we'd ever seen, and big broods. Like there was quite a few hens that had 12, 13, 14 poults with them.
Wow.
And they made it through is the big thing. Like we'd see broods in years prior, but there might only be two or three poults with a hen. And last year we saw some really big broods. And actually the other morning there was a big wad of jakes. Actually, I think there was like 12 or 13 jakes that were together. I heard some gobbling and went and glassed a field and they were all jakes. There wasn't a single longbird out there, but it's just, it's good to see some of those younger birds coming up now.
Yeah, and making for sure. I think that's a big thing where we're at. And Jeff, you used to do some of it, but as far as the coon hunting and stuff, it used to be really big around where we're at, running dogs and stuff, and guys would go, even trapping them. They're not worth anything now. A lot of guys are getting shut down on running dogs and stuff. There's not a lot of guys doing it anymore. And I think that's been a huge thing on the turkeys. I don't know, Jeff, what.
Well, as far as running the dogs and stuff, the coon hunting, it's still kind of going on, but it's died down. A lot of your old coon hunters are gone.
Not near what it used to be.
Not near what it used to be. Plus, fur prices have dropped or non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then back when, when was it? The late, I'm going to say about the mid-90s, running dogs, you know, deer hunting got to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, you know, these hounds are chasing all of our deer away.
Right.
You know, no, they wasn't, because I've seen firsthand, you know, deer just move out of the way of the dogs.
Right.
Let them go through. But we killed a lot of coyotes that way. That's a good tool for coyote population control and stuff.
And the coons as well.
And the coons as well. Since then, a lot of landowners, especially you get these guys from out of state and stuff, they don't want you on their ground. They don't want your dogs on their ground. You know, they'll take care of their coyote population themselves, whether they do or not, you know.
Right.
That's their deal. But, you know, the coyotes now down here is getting out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
The coons are getting out of hand. And so now we're seeing nest predation on the turkeys drop. I mean, it's just going crazy. We don't have the turkeys like we used to. You know, the coyotes is taking over everywhere. So, you know, it's a balance and it's kind of imbalanced, but I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
I'm old school. You know, I grew up back then. That's how I knew that we did conservation, and now everything's new. And, you know, I guess that time has gone and it probably never will come back.
Right. But it's good to hear, like, you guys foresters are still doing some trapping and stuff. And sounds like you're putting a hurting on the coon population, which obviously in turn you're seeing a benefit for your turkeys. You talk to different guys around here and there's different opinions, whether it's nest predation or actual predation from coyotes and bobcats, or the habitat has something to do with it. Sounds to me like just you guys putting a hurting on the raccoon numbers has really helped you guys out. You think you guys are going to, I mean, what are your thoughts on this spring? You guys think you're going to do okay this spring? Or because like us, we're not really too optimistic, I don't think, around where we're at.
Yeah, I think we'll have a little bit of luck. There's definitely some birds around.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some pretty decent sized flocks of gobblers this year. Just it kind of depends on how they disperse and stuff, but we'll definitely have some birds around.
That's good.
We'll have a little bit. But
the last thing I wanted to kind of get on, because I want to get you out of here. I know you got other stuff going on, so obviously you're a busy guy. So are you going to get Terry to kill a bigger deer than Mark this year?
I don't know. Mark is...
Putting him on the spot,
though. Mark, he's got a rabbit's foot and a lucky horse, too. He's really good. He's really good, but he's got a little bit of luck there, too.
Yeah, sure.
And with Wade and Perry up there, I mean, they do an awesome job up there helping him out on his farms and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see.
How much of that falls on you when Mark's killing all the bigger deer? Does Terry threaten to maybe go pull Wade from him and make a trade or something?
Oh, no, no. Oh, I don't think so. Well, at least, I don't know, maybe he's talking to Mark behind my back.
Go through the front office.
No, Perry and I get along. We get along awesome.
Yeah, I'd imagine those guys are pretty easy to get along with and work for. So,
yeah.
But, no, man, I appreciate your time. Before I get you off here, social media, where can guys find you at if they want to follow you anywhere?
I'm just on Instagram, forestbonin_DreeOutdoors. And then on Facebook, I don't post much on Facebook, but right. It's just Bonin. But Instagram is kind of where I try to keep people updated on the hunting stuff and all that.
Cool, man. So. And yeah, for anybody listening, his Instagram is a good follow. I think I follow you on both our business account and my personal account. And like seeing the stuff you got coming out and all the burning and stuff you guys are doing, the shed hunting, and then obviously the stuff in season is cool as well. So again, man, thanks for the time coming on and sharing some stuff with us. And if you ever want to come back, just let us know. We'll make room for you.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Forrest. Take it easy, man.
Thanks, Forrest.
Thank you.
Yep. So that was Forrest Bonin. We really appreciate him coming on. I thought he had a lot of good information and some good stuff. I thought that was really good, just kind of in passing, what he mentioned about them trapping the coons and stuff for turkeys, because we've talked different times. And again, I'll have someone on here who's more of a turkey hunter than we are to talk about some turkey hunting. But just like some habitat guys in general about what their thoughts are on why the turkey numbers are down. And like a common theme seems to be the nest predation, so the coons are a big thing on that. But anyway, that kind of wraps up what we had, or the conversation with Forrest there. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that, and we'll try to have him back on in the future. Obviously, he's going to be just as busy as we are with planting season coming up and everybody else. But now, since Nate's in, he showed up late to the party. Well, that's all right. Better late than never. I want to talk a little bit about some shed hunting, because I know, well, me and you stumbled across a good one. And
yeah.
And then I saw you found some good ones a few days later.
Yeah.
So give us an update on that.
Oh, me and you were walking around out there, stumbling around out there.
Well, let me paint the picture for you first. So we're walking Nate's property and seeing what he's thinking and what he's got going on out there. And we're walking up to pretty close to where me and you hunted.
Yeah.
Through the little woods in the middle there. And Nate just stops on a dime. He turns. And his arm comes up like a pointing dog. His ears, I think his ears perked up forwards. Right. And man, he made a beeline.
Did his tail stick out?
Yeah, I did.
Did it? Is that right?
He made a beeline. And
herb
I knew what he had seen, but I didn't know what it was. So
yeah.
I looked over and I just shining in the sunlight in the opening right there of the brush on the ground. There's this big antler laying there. Yeah, I heard that noise. But I ran over and picked it up. I knew exactly what it was. It was the left side from that buck I shot last year's left side from the buck I shot this year.
Yeah.
I had looked for him a little bit. I had a buddy that looked for him a whole bunch. He's a whole lot better shed hunter than I am. He walked right out there looking for him a lot.
I don't know. Now.
So I got to thinking, they wasn't a leaf covering that thing at all. I don't know that it had been right there all the time.
Probably not.
So I think squirrels might move the things around a little bit. I've heard guys say that coyotes mess with them.
That, yeah. That makes sense.
I've never seen that. I have no proof of that. Squirrels had chewed on it.
Yeah.
But, like, the ones I found, the ones me and Kaylee found, the set we found, all I could see was tips of three little tines sticking up out of the leaves. And I was, I don't know, 5 feet away from them. I looked at them. I raced over and picked them up, you know, and there's a 140-inch 10-point set, you know. They were covered with leaves.
Yeah.
This thing that me and you found laying perfectly on top of the leaves, and it's been there for a year. Yep. Something had to have moved it.
Well, there was a lot of deadhead doe. Well, there were two, I think, that I stumbled across in that area. So it makes sense that if a coyote's in there gnawing on bones and stuff, and he just happens to come across an antler, it's no different than any other bone. He might carry it for a certain distance and drop the thing.
You guys ever seen that?
No.
I can trip over one before I see it.
Yeah.
I cannot find a shed. I'll walk past it, and my wife will go, hey, why? I thought that's what we were looking for. Seriously. It's happened.
No, I've never seen that. Makes sense because, I mean, coyotes are a dog, you know?
Yep.
And, like, my lab and that, he'll bring stuff up to the house, you know, and he's brought a couple sheds up to the house and chewed around on them, you know?
Yeah.
I think maybe it's where they're at the base, you know, where that
scent
and stuff is, and it's a little bit softer, you know.
And depending on how early they find it, a little bit of blood on there.
You know, so, you know, it kind of gives them something that they like. But, yeah, no, it makes sense to me that Kyle's probably put
I got to thinking, you know, they wasn't a leaf on it.
Oh, you're in trouble.
They wasn't a leaf on it, you know. They ain't no way that thing laid there.
Couldn't have.
Yeah. And a leaf didn't fall on it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but anyway, it had been chewed up some by squirrels, but it wasn't bad.
No, it was a lot better than the other one we found. It looked like a boomerang.
Correct.
So you go out and look for the other half?
Man, we walked circles, and I probably most of the time I was just looking at what I had in my hand there. Not looking for the other side, you know.
The but shed, yeah. Right?
Yes. We walked through that woods looking, but gosh, we never found it. And me and Kaylee went back, a couple days later when we found that other set. Now we found them in another draw.
Yeah, I was gonna ask where you came across those at.
Yeah, we found them in another draw. We hardly ever look over there for sheds. They don't stay in there too much, you know. But apparently that buck did last year. Now he died this year too. Those were last year's sheds.
Yep.
That we found. They hadn't been chewed on hardly any. But that's just that draw over there's got a whole lot of hedge trees. And just a couple of ash trees. Of course, you know what they're doing. They're falling. I was worried we was going to die in there. It's a little windy.
It's a good thing, yeah.
Anyway, there ain't many trees over there squirrels want to be in, so I guess that's why they probably wasn't chewing on very much.
Yep.
He's dead, too.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, too, you wanting to burn all that stuff. I'd really be surprised if a guy didn't come across a few sheds after burning that off.
I think you'd have to.
Whether they're from last year's or this year's.
Set-aside fields that have caught fire,
went
out there and put them out. And you'll see sheds out there in the field that you would have never found had it not burnt off.
And especially knowing, like, your buck was bedding out there, so you know other bucks have bed out there before.
Yep.
And then in the winter and all that. So.
Yep. Of course, Kaylee's pregnant. When she got tired of driving, or
that happened.
Well, that's
for another shed hunt story.
Another episode.
Yeah.
I'm
proud of you, son.
When she got tired of walking around, we started riding the side-by-side, circling out there on them tops. Of course, I showed you where he was laying, how he was laying and everything. So we looked real good there where he laid on circling on the side-by-side out there in the set-aside, mode set-aside.
Right.
And then on the other tops that looked kind of like that, you know, we went out there looking. Because There's no way he shed that antler right there where we found it. It could have been close.
Yeah.
But there's no way he shed it right there. Something had messed with it.
Because it was almost on your path, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you would have saw it had it been there like that.
Yeah. Oh, I'd been within 15 yards of that spot many times this year.
Yep. I think you're right. Something had, whether it was a big burly squirrel or a coyote or whatever it was, something had probably carried it.
Yep.
But that's kind of the update I want to get, because I knew you found those other two from that 10.
Yep.
That had got, and it was, you said he's about 140.
I figured he 140.
From the year before last, and he was measured right at 160 this year, didn't he?
162, yep.
And probably 4.5
I think he was 3 last year. I think he's 4 this year. Not much mass, really wide, not much mass, decent height. I totally would have shot him this year, like, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wanted to shoot him. I had him at 50, and I wanted him bad, but anyway.
And that gives you a pretty good idea, like, just from 3.5 to 4.5, he gained 20 inches.
Yeah.
And, you know, roughly.
Yeah. I'd like to measure him. I think he was about 18 wide last year. Mm-hmm. He was 22 wide this year.
Yeah.
But I thought he was about 18 wide last year. Just a pretty young buck, you know. Mm-hmm. But he put on mass, he put on height, and a little width too, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, a big jump there. Big jump.
For sure. I know this, rain's kind of been putting a damper on all that burning stuff, too, because we talked about yours, and we talked about yours, and we're going to have to be getting on that stuff.
I know it is getting...
It'll still burn.
Yeah.
Jeff, yours will burn right now.
My burn tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
In fact, it wouldn't be a bad idea if we catch a good day where there's no wind to get that done while there's still a lot of moisture in the ground.
Because, you know, if we don't, that's going to get out of control on us. Real quick.
Yeah.
And, you know, where it's at, you know, I got cut timber that's, it's been cut, what, 5 years now? You know, and so you're talking dried briars and...
Well, you also have some evergreens and stuff that you, I've got you don't want to damage, trees, right?
You know, hiding my house, you know.
Yeah, right not, now.
Right now, you know, and so...
Have you ever seen one of them burn?
Yes, I have.
Oh, they burn real well.
Yeah, they
a pine tree or a house?
Yes, both. Yeah, one of my first fire calls I ever was on was when we went down to that wildfire down at McLeansboro.
It was topping the trees.
And it was topping the trees. It looked like bombs going off over my head. And I was thinking, what the hell did I just volunteer for?
McLeansboro, Kansas?
Yeah, something like that.
Taking me back north.
Yeah, might just as well been. But anyway... Yeah, you know, where I'm at and what I got around everything, we got to kind of pick our day and make sure it's perfect. But we need to get this stuff done because it's that time.
It is. The weather's going to turn to where that can start greening up and doing what you want to do.
But I don't want it to do right now.
Right.
Yeah. And here in about a month or so, it's going to be over the next month and a half.
Well, where I've got that switchgrass, you know, we need to get that burnt down and get that taken care of so that way it'll come back. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to get green and then burn it and kill it, you know. So it's all a timing factor here. We got, the time is on us. We got to get.
The cold snap here has probably helped us a little bit, slowed down the soil temperature rising a little.
Yes. Yeah.
I think you said Forrest had been burning pretty regular here.
He's been burning. Well, according to his Instagram, and he was actually one of the things that, whether it was going to work out or not, to whether we could get him on, was whether or not he was going to be burning this few days. But obviously, the rain stopped that. So, yeah, it's definitely time of year to be doing that because we're right around the corner from planting season.
Yep.
And we need to be getting that stuff ready. So, and then like we talked about before, we'll document all that stuff and then put it up. And another thing with that, I was getting crap about the store earlier and also about saying that. Not having it ready because I've been saying for like the past 6 episodes that we're going to do our video over there. Well, since we were supposed to have Dusty on tonight, I wasn't going to do it tonight. Next week, everything's in line. Hold me to it. We're going to do video for the first time next week for our podcast.
So. Holy crap, you man. I'm going to have to shower before I come.
They can't smell you through the camera.
I'm going to buy a mask.
We don't have anything that fancy. So anyway, next week we'll start that. And then like with your property and stuff and some of the other stuff we're doing, I want to start putting more stuff on the YouTube content-wise, informative stuff, just stuff of us, what we're doing and keeping up with that. And your property may be a good kind of pilot property to do that on. It's,
yeah, I mean,
and it's close.
It's not a new property, but it basically is a new property just because of negligence and
yeah,
everything else over the years, you know. So it's basically starting over.
But for sure, that half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the right size for a pilot program.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a huge property, you know.
If it gets out of hand, you're only burning, what, 25, 30 acres?
Yeah, my house.
Oh.
That's a minor thing.
Yeah. But, you know, whatever. But
hey, I know a guy.
Do you?
Yeah. Save the pine trees.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
let the house grow. First save pine trees.
They don't have insurance on the pine trees.
That's right.
I know a guy. He'll be all right.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to hold you to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got that stuff coming up. That's exciting. I think that'll be hopefully some good content to put on the YouTube.
Oh, I think it will. We get a video, you know, get the drone out, play around with that, see what we can, kind of footage we can get.
Fall out of the sky inside the fire.
Well, it's your drone, so, you know, yeah. Whatever. No loss on my part.
That'll be really cool on your property, too, if we get to burning that, if we can get a drone out there, because how much we're burning.
Yeah.
It'd be cool. And, yeah. Of course, like we've said before, if you burn stuff and you don't post it anywhere, did you really burn it?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Pictures or it didn't happen.
That's right.
Yeah. It don't matter if you drive by and the ground is scorched. If you ain't got a picture on Instagram, it didn't happen.
Yeah. You can't scroll Facebook right now without seeing flames every other post if you're on a hunting group of any kind. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Just saying it's the time of year.
We killed that horse.
Yeah. It's the time of year. So, that's some stuff we got coming up. And then, like I said, I wanted to talk about that shed hunting. We did talk to Forrest a little bit about it as far as the deer that are still holding. He's figuring like 95% of his bucks, or they're figuring like 95% of their bucks over there have dropped. And he said, was it the bucks in Missouri or Illinois? He said,
Illinois dropped first.
Yeah, yeah. Illinois had dropped by January, February, most of where they were at. So, have you heard any more from anybody or seen any more?
Well, that's probably going to get taxed.
That's possible. Yeah, to get rid of those antlers.
Get rid of them antlers, get rid of that tax.
I don't recall who I was talking to, but it was just last week they had still seen bucks with antlers.
Wow.
There was more than one buck. It was several together. And he figured some of them did, and they're obviously big enough deer that they were bucks that some of them didn't, but... It surprised me that there's still some holding on, and not just one side, both sides. Yeah.
So, two weeks ago at work, I seen bucks with both sides. Mm-hmm. This, you know, I worked the last 6 days, and I've seen deer every morning, every afternoon there at work, and I ain't seen a horn one. So in that 2 week period, I think they've dropped.
Yeah, right now I could change in a matter of just a few days. You can see two or three, and then they're all gone.
Yep. And that's why I think, and he said they're wrapping up their shed hunting. They went through maybe one more time recently, but they were pretty much done with that, what they were doing. And, you know, multiple things go into that. Obviously, they believe that most of theirs have dropped already, and they found a lot of the ones they wanted to find. That doesn't mean where we're at or necessarily if you guys got to be done shed hunting, though. And that's why Saturday we're going to have... an episode come up. Steve Shirk's going to be back on. We're going to talk about his article about shed hunting. We have a lot of good stuff in there. So now that, and I'd have to think that that's probably a pretty close to a number, 90 to 100%. Obviously, probably not 100%, but 90%+ across most of the Midwest is probably going to have dropped by now, unless you get way up north. I don't know where they would be at. But now's the time. Like, you could have went out in the last month and not found the sheds from a buck you were looking for, because he may have still been hanging on to them. So at least now you're pretty sure that most of them had dropped. If you go out there and walk and you don't find him, you can probably be pretty sure that he just didn't drop them on you or you didn't see him. It's not that he's still hanging on to them. So we're going to talk about that on Saturday and some stuff that he looks for and stuff that he does. Like I said, we'll go through the article with him, and I think that'll be good too. So
I think cameras are... Forrest hit on a key. They were using their cameras... This time of year and earlier to see when their target bucks were dropping their antlers and to help them locate where and when. And they hadn't shut their cameras off, but they'd shut the cell
feature
off. So they were still picturing, but they thought there was enough of the bucks had dropped that there wasn't any reason to throw it to the cell.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were going to crank that back on in probably July or something like
he
that.
He said, yeah, early June. Or mid-June, late August, or early July. So they
can pick up on those bucks. They can start, at that time, they believe they can start trying to identify this guy.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a guy that we thought, you know, was over here. It's that kind of
thing. Where he's at.
So it's kind of interesting to see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what those guys are doing with all the cameras that they have and the resources and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because we talked about before, well, all of us different times, and even the first episode we did for the podcast, talking about when we run cameras and how to run them and times of year and all that, so that was pretty interesting as far as when he started and stopped, because like we've talked before, I won't start running them again probably till August. Now I'm a little different situation than those guys, obviously, but I think that's about the same with you, Nate, and Jeff. I don't know when you're planning on running yours again on that property down there or anything.
Well, since I border public ground, I can probably run it about any time I want to right now, because you know, nobody's gonna be around there. I'm thinking late July, first of August, I'll start putting cameras up.
Yeah. And that's probably a pretty good time frame. Like he was talking about, you're going to start being able to identify those bucks. They got enough headgear on, enough characteristics that you can tell, okay, that's your buck from last year.
What I liked, and I mean, I didn't get to comment on his comment, but so I will now, but what I liked, what he pointed out too, was the crop rotation.
Yeah.
You know, where the corn was last year, that's going to be beans. And where the beans was this year, that's going to be corn.
95% of the time.
Yep. And so, you know, everything that the pattern I had last year for these deer is going to flip-flop. And the only thing I have to my advantage is that I hunt a narrow part of timber.
Yep.
You know, that borders that public ground. And so hopefully they'll flip over on the private ground, and I'll have a better shot at them. But I'm still going to hunt the same area,
right?
You know, but I kind of have a strategy. You know, I hunting a new ground. You got your first year, your expectations are pretty low, or they should be, because you know it's just
you don't know anything about it.
You're trying to figure it out.
You can only figure so much out from scouting in the summer.
Yeah, and so until you're out there putting out the time and watching the observation, you might as well, if you're hunting a new ground, I believe that the 95, 98% of the time that you're out there is mostly for observation.
And you should probably hunt accordingly.
Yeah, you might get you a doe, you know, for meat or whatever. You might get lucky and have a nice big buck walk if you're there at the right time, you know, but it kind of gives you a strategy for next year.
Yep.
And that's what I was out there for. That's what I was out there for this year. That's my phone.
So, time out. Jeff's got his phone ringing.
I thought we was in church. I thought Nate broke out in a song there.
I thought Nate found another shed. Anyway, what were you saying?
But, you know,
new property.
It kind of gives you an idea.
That's staying in, by the way.
Yeah, that's fine, because I don't care. I ain't ashamed. I mean, you know, that's my
side note on that. That's
my Bible verse for the day.
Yeah. So, side note on that, I was getting some heck for saying crap like every episode. Like, hey, we're not going to be fake here. It is what it is.
Yeah, you
know, it's real. So sometimes our Bible verse ringtone comes across while we're recording the podcast.
I mean, I'm sorry.
But you know, one thing I picked up on what Forrest said was he was talking about individual deer. They have tracked individual deer for long enough. They know which deer likes corn. They know which particular buck likes soybeans. So, yeah.
But that's another thing, too, where the cameras come in play is because I don't know what, you know, I had my target buck this year, that drop kind 8. I don't know if he's alive now or not, because, you know, hunting next public ground, I'm hunting on 30 acres.
Right.
That joins up to how many hundreds or thousands of acres of public ground.
Yeah, right there is a few hundred there in one spot.
Right. But, you know what I'm saying? And so I can't control that. That's a factor I can't control. And so I'll put my cameras out in July, late July, early August to see my inventory, because I can't just focus on one deer for next year.
You may have to target a particular buck that's in your inventory.
Exactly.
It may not be him. He may not be in your inventory.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. Right, right. You know, he may be removed from that inventory now.
Or he may just like corn.
Or he may just like corn.
Right. Yeah. Whereas a guy...
And if he does, well then, praise God, he'll be on my side of the property.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, and that's something, you know, interesting, whether you're hunting on public ground or next to public ground. The flip side of that would be if you're hunting like 200 acres of private ground and it's bordered by all private ground and you're all kind of on the same page, or at least a couple of you are, you're going to have a target buck from, like Nate, for example, for the Funky 8. A target buck you may have for a couple, 2, 3, even 4 years, depending on how old he gets.
Right.
Whereas if you're on public or next to public, it's like, okay, these are the bucks I have this year.
Yep.
Which one of these is the most mature buck that I want to take? So right. your target list is not necessarily carrying over year to year. Now it might, but right. most of the time it's going to be, this is what I got. I'm going to target this buck for this year. If I get him, great. If I don't, that's probably my shot at him.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's something that's kind of a unique thing to your situation or a public ground
right.
situation.
And, you know, and believe me, it was heartbreaking to see him, you know.
Just right there
and couldn't get a shot at him because I knew that's probably the only chance I'd ever have at him again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Illinois firearm shotgun season was coming up in just a couple of days.
Can you lock up with a crossbow?
I don't.
Well, I'm asking for a friend.
Nah.
Not that it's ever happened before.
Not on a crossbow. I've seen it happen with a
that's
bow.
That's my first year of a crossbow.
I've seen it happen with a bow. Oh, I don't know. I said for a friend. I don't.
That was back in the 80s. Give me a break.
It's not in the 80s.
Yes, it was. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Maybe early 90s.
No.
Yeah. Anyways, what he was saying, and like you said, in preferences and stuff, I'll catch Nate up a little bit. He said that there were certain bucks where, depending on what the crop rotation was, so say I had corn on this side and bean on this side. Well, this buck would hang out down here and this buck would hang out up here. The next year, they'd be on totally opposite ends of the farm because this buck just preferred beans. He called them a bean hog. Some of them were corn hogs, just preferred beans to corn or corn to beans. And that would shift where they were at, you know, on the farm.
Did he say anything if they seemed, when one buck was on the beans, and then the next year, when the other buck was on the corn, but, you know, the beans and corn were in the same spot, did each buck do the same thing that the other one did when they were down there? Did he say anything about that?
Nope. I wish you'd been here to ask him that. I didn't even think about it. But that would be interesting to know, like, if they had similar patterns.
Are they both going to behave the same in that area?
Yep.
Because that's what they want to eat. It don't matter what it is. That's what they want to eat. They're going to be there. Did they both behave the same when they were going into that
so,
field?
So, like, do they switch bedding spots and travel corridors as well?
Yeah,
that'd be interesting to know.
Yeah.
And the one thing I wanted to add to that, not I wanted to comment whenever he said that, but I didn't get a chance to. But anyways, you know, like if you're putting in a new food plot or you have the acreage for it and stuff, why not cater to both?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have talked about this. We've discussed it on our plan of what we want to do with my place. You know, I'm going to have corn to screen my plot from the road.
Mm-hmm.
But then inside the corn, I'm also going to put a few rows of beans, you know, standing beans or whatever.
Yep.
And then I'll have my clover and chicory and stuff. So I'm kind of catering to both. You know, if a deer prefers corn, well, guess what? He's got corn. If he prefers beans, guess what? He's going to have beans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so kind of implement that into your thinking when you're doing the food plots.
Yeah, and if you've got the ground to do it, but say you're next to an ag field, be on an opposite rotation of that guy.
Well, not only that, you know, in ag fields, you know, come October, November, whatever, it's going to be gone.
They're gone anyway.
You know, they're just going to pick up whatever scraps the combine left behind.
Yep.
You know, and so
hope he's got a gleaner.
Or an international.
Oh Lord, we're bleeding.
For all you John Deere guys,
bleeding green.
Well, you know.
Anyway,
John Deere always made the best combine. That's all there is to say. But anyway, you know, that's going to be gone. So you're still going to have your food source standing there. With your grains. So whether it's corn, beans, or sorghum. You know, and My gosh, remember when sorghum was a big thing here around?
Oh, yeah.
And where'd we always find all the deer?
Oh, yeah.
They was always in them sorghum fields. Yeah. Number one, they had cover. And number two, they had food.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they just laid out there, didn't
they? They just lay out
there. Would bed out there in the field. Maybe.
What'd you do with them? Did you try to sneak up on them, you or know, just hope he came to you?
You know what? I know one guy, a friend of mine, just lives up the road from me during firearm shotgun season, and everybody gave him crap about it, but he had two buck tags, you know, because Illinois still gives you two buck tags.
Mm-hmm.
And during firearm shotgun season, he spotted a buck out in the sorghum field, out in the middle of it. All he seen was his horn sticking up. So he belly crawled between the stalks, got within range, shot that buck, and then all of a sudden another buck, same size, and these are 150-inch deer, same size, jumped up right beside it, so he shot it too. And everybody gave him crap for killing two bucks, you know, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there you had two bucks during the first part of shotgun season, which should have been the rut,
mm-hmm.
and they was within 40, 50 yards of each other.
Yep.
And the Milo stalks bedded down. And that's what he did. He just belly crawled up to him like a sniper or, you know, something. Yeah. But, you know, and he got the job done. And there's nice 150-inch 10-point deer.
Yeah. And the benefit I see to, like, the sorghum over the corn, if you're in the right situation to do it, the deer will eat the corn as it's coming up. They won't really touch the sorghum because it's more of a grass than corn even. I mean, the way it grows and all that.
They're both in the same category, but...
Right. There's a different palatability.
The deer will eat the swirl out of the corn before they will the sorghum.
Yeah, and they won't really eat the sorghum until it heads out, and they'll eat the seeds off of it.
Right.
But so if you have limited acreage to plant, and you don't have that, forage that we talked about before in the woods and stuff around you and all that, maybe go look at sorghum.
And the thing about sorghum is, if you compare sorghum to corn. Corn is carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm. Milo for us country boys.
Milo, sorghum, whatever. But corn is full of carbohydrates. That's mostly what corn is, a carbohydrate.
Yep.
Milo sorghum is a protein.
Yep.
And so...
More like a soybean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it kind of...
There's more nutrition.
There's more nutrition to the sorghum and Milo than there is to the corn. The corn is basically just a filler and a fattener to get them...
Yeah, and give them energy.
Yep, but, you know, the protein and stuff helps them out a lot more than what the corn does.
Yep, and before we get
I think, though, bedding, though, in sorghum.
Biden.
Bedding.
Oh, bedding. I'm sorry.
Bedding in the sorghum, deer feel more comfortable because it's not 8 feet tall like corn.
Right.
So they can see through there.
They stand up and they can see everything.
They stand up and they can see, and they can walk out through there and see all their surroundings and be safe enough to lay down
and
still see some of it.
It's thick enough, though, they can lay down and feel safe.
Yeah.
They can hide in it.
Which you could do in corn, but then they can only see, so many feet.
And you can't see them either. You can get up in a tree stand and see a deer in a Milo field where you can't in a corn field.
But they can see you.
But they can see. Yeah. Remember the doe that you shot in my woods that year? There was a cut Milo field
mm-hmm.
right next to it. How many, we lost blood trail. How many rows did we have to walk up and down looking mm-hmm. for this deer until we finally stepped on it?
Quite a few.
You could, and it was colder than crap out there that day, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Before we get off of it, like you were talking about having both the corn and the beans, I wanted to say there was kind of a thing for a while, and maybe some guys are still doing it. When they would plant corn, like on their 30-inch rows, and then they would plant beans between the corn rows.
That's because beans puts out nitrogen
right.
that the corn needs to grow. But eventually, your corn's going to shade out your beans.
Yeah. The research and studies have been done on it. You're way better off, if you've got 2 acres.
Separate them.
To just plant 1 acre of corn, 1 acre of beans, and then switch sides the next year. Because you're still going to get the benefit from the nitrogen.
Yep.
You're not going to shade out your beans. You're going to get a lot better production. And then even if you're just trying to figure out what your deer are liking, mm-hmm. if they go to that field that you've planted with corn and beans both in it, unless you can see exactly what they're eating down in there,
right.
you're not going to know. If you plant them beside each other, you can tell, okay, they've been out in the bean field way more than they have the corn field.
Most of us don't have the luxury of targeting a buck 2, 3, 4, 5 years out and or the ability to say we're going to plant corn here and no, we're going to plant beans here. So... I appreciate the fact that they do. Most of us don't. So whatever that guy across the fence is planting, that's how we're going to have to hunt or scout or stand or
anything. But if you've got the room to do it.
If you have the room to do it, absolutely. But if you don't, you just live with what's next door to you.
Right. And there's nothing that's not taken away from anything from hunting plots in them. And opening areas out
wherever you're
at. You know, if you got open area, you know, even if it's just a small percentage of an acre and you want to put clover and stuff out there, I'm not saying that, you know, go to corn and beans, you know, absolutely use your clover, chicory, turnips, whatever you want to use. But if you got like a, like we're going to do mine, I'm going to have about 2 acres. Because of diesel fuel and all that crap, I'm gonna have to cut it down. Biden. But anyway, you know,
there's an appropriate spot for that word.
Trump 24. But we got it. You know, if you have that accessibility, that that ground and stuff, well then you know it makes sense to give them a variety of food instead of just one food. You know, I give them a variety of nutrients, whether it's carbohydrates, protein, your clover, your chicory, your turnips, whatever, you know.
And I think,
give them a reason to want to come to your place instead of just going out into that crop field.
Yeah, and especially where we're at, in my opinion, start with your green stuff first, whether it be the clover and chicory, the turnips, radishes, that stuff. And then if you have more room and you've got enough of that stuff stuff established, then go to your corn and beans. Mm-hmm. Don't start with the corn and beans because that stuff's all over the place where we're at. Now, if you can go ahead, well, let me phrase it this way. If you've got 2 acres for a food plot, okay, and even a mile down the road, there's a 200-acre cornfield, and a mile the other way, there's a 100-acre bean field, why wouldn't you use your 2 acres for something that they can't get anywhere else? Rather than planting a corn and beans.
Yes and no. I mean, let's look at it. They're used to eating corn and beans.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they're used to going to. So add a little bit of the corn, add a little bit of the beans, and then add the remainder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying plant the whole 2 acres to corn.
Right.
Or, you know, plant an acre to corn and plant an acre to beans.
It still needs to be a ratio there.
It needs to be a ratio. You know, like I'm going where I'm at, you know, I got a robe that... just traveled heavily during hunting season, you know, right next to where I want to put my food plot. So I'm going to use the corn as a screen. We're going to plant about 6 to 8 rows of corn, you know, let it stand, do its thing. And then outside of that or inside of that, because I'm working from the road in towards the woods, inside of that, I plan on planting 6 to 8 rows of beans, you know, leave them alone, let them stand, let them do their thing. You know, going to have a little bit of switchgrass in there, whatever wants to come up. Yep. And then I'm going to have the clover and chicory from inside the beans, switchgrass, to the woods. So, you know, I'm giving them a salad or a buffet to choose from, I guess is what the best words from it. You know, so they'll have their corn, they'll have their beans, some switchgrass, whatever, for cover. And then they're going to have the clover and chicory, you know, for their spring and summer growth.
Yep. And I don't know what an exact ratio would be, but in my mind, it would be something like either like a 60-40 or maybe even a 70-30, where if you want the corn and beans, go ahead and plant either 60 or 70% of the green stuff first, and then use that remaining 30 or 40, like basically what you're going to do for the corn and beans.
Right. Yeah. You know, but use it smartly, you know, like where I need to use it for a screen to screen my food plot and where I'm intending for my deer to feel comfortable come out to feed, use it intelligently to, you know, use the corn to screen it from the road where people can't see through it to see what's out there.
Mm-hmm. And don't let, again, try to maximize.
I know, we're in Southern Illinois, the word intelligent is a little bit. That's a double negative.
You doing anything intelligently kind of struck me there a minute.
Well, you know,
never mind me.
It was a moment.
Yeah,
I saw the look.
Yeah,
good thing it wasn't on video.
Hey, we're gonna be next.
Yeah.
Well, I won't be next week.
No. Well, what
may be on assignment?
No. What we're getting at: use your property, maximize what you can get out of it. Basically, whatever you're gonna plant, and plan out accordingly to what's around you, and be smart about it. But
and the thing, you know, we was talking about the corn bean rotation. I mean, next year I'm going to be into a little bit of a dilemma there because the smart thing for me to do, not that I've ever done anything smart in my life, beat you to it, but the smart thing for me to do would be put beans outside and the corn inside. So we're going to have to figure what we want to do there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's where us leaving that strip of switchgrass that's already established is going to come into play.
Right.
Next year, you know, at least that will be there as a more cover and barrier for them mm-hmm. from the road.
For sure. And then, obviously, on top of all your food plots and stuff, we got to get these guys in here. If you have all that stuff, and especially this time of year when all the does are have the their fawns still haven't, what's the word I'm looking for?
Gestation.
Yeah, they're still in the gestation period.
That's an intelligent word.
Did you see the fetus on the, they're at the split, they're by where you work?
I suppose not.
The deer fetus, not a human. But I know I found a body by where.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Well, that cuts that out. So go ahead now. It's too late. Just let her rip, big boy.
But, you know, did you not? I'm sorry. It just hit me where you said gestation.
One of them get roadkill.
Well, one of them got roadkill, and there's a fetus about that long, a deer fetus.
Knocking out of it.
Laying in the middle. Right there, where veterans, you know, after, like, coming from the west, you go through the light, yeah. And veterans comes from a four to a two.
Yeah.
Right there, there's a fetus about that long laying in the middle.
No, I did not
and
see
it, that. I even stopped and looked, and it make sure it wasn't a human after what I've heard on the radio.
Yeah.
And it's specifically a deer. You can make it out.
So, man. The ones that have not been road killed are still inside the does.
Right.
And they're still providing nutrition for them. And if they're bucks, that's when a lot of that antler
You're going to edit potential, this anyway. So.
Oh, no, it's staying. That's where a lot of that antler potential is going to start to come into play, and all that comes from excess. Even in the deer, the bucks that are already, you know, 3-4 years old are regrowing their antlers, any extra antler growth comes from excess nutrition. Well, you
right.
get excess nutrition from your supplements and proteins and stuff like that, which is where Rack's Big Game Supplements comes in. They're a veteran-owned company out of northeast Nebraska. You know, they're deer hunters just like us. I say that every week. I've talked to these guys several times. That they have the same mindset as we do. At the time when they come up with this stuff, they're just looking to get more out of the minerals and feed than was already on the market. And some of the kind of maybe some of the bigger stuff that you see advertised a lot. So they developed Rack's products through years of research and came up with one of the best mixes available that will help improve your herd's overall health, like I said, while not feeding non-target species like the raccoons and the squirrels and all that stuff. They've got minerals, protein blocks, pelletized feed, and meal feed, all specifically designed for whitetail. So no matter what you're doing, whether you want to put out minerals like in your dirt and stuff, pelletized feed for your feeders, your drop feeders and stuff, meal feed, they've got a lot of stuff for you guys out there. You can use the discount code RHO22, that's capital RHO22 at checkout. You'll receive 5% off your entire order at racksmineral.com, RAKSmineral.com. You can also stop by our shop, which will be open next week, and see what we have in stock or order what we don't have, and we'll save you some money on shipping there. So, because some of that stuff, you would get a 40-pound bag of seed shipping just like everything else has gone up. So you can stop in the shop. Figure out what we do have. If you want something we don't have, order it. And that goes for all the seed. If you guys want to support the podcast, you like what we're doing, you can stop in the shop and buy stuff. You can go to our online website. You can order it there. It's planting season. You're going to be buying seed anyway. If you like what we're doing, come get it from us.
Right? Or even if you don't.
That's right. Yeah.
We'll give you the best price. You
seed might be better than the show.
That's right. It could be. But either way, and if you want something you don't see on the website or we don't have in the store, just send us a message through the website, on our Facebook page, and I'll see what I can do for you as far as getting you that at a better price. Because, again, like everything else, seed's gone way over out of the roof, too. So that's a way you can support. Another way, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. 1 star, 5 stars, whatever it is. Tell us we suck. Tell us we're great. Tell us you love us. Tell us you hate us. Either way, we like hearing from you guys. If you ever have any questions, you can give us feedback through there, the website.
Does ex-wives count?
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll filter those out. And then you can subscribe on YouTube if you're listening to this there. Like I said, we're going to have some new video content
coming out. You get 5 1-stars, couldn't you?
I get 3.
Oh, okay.
Give me a break.
And then you can also follow us on Spotify. So while Jeff's figuring out how many ex-wives he has, we're going to get off of here.
Oh, I know. Your dad is saying he's confused.
And we'll catch you guys actually on Saturday. We'll have Steve Shirk coming on, which will be tomorrow. So be looking for that.
What?
And then You know, this is coming out on Friday.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you haven't confused.
That's not hard to do. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you again later.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.